AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
You probably already know that there are currently over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage. If you're a farmer, that gives you over 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
You know, when 2020 started, nobody expected what happened. And I certainly didn't expect to be as happy as I am to get to the end of the year. But the flip of a calendar doesn't guarantee better times are coming. We've all got to work at it. So let's all go ahead and get started.
Live from the final day of 2020, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with Mike Watley from the National Restaurant Association. Then it's Andy Knepp, head of environmental strategy at Bayer Crop Science. And the final segment, Scott Shelady from the Cow Guy Group. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lowry.
Davis Michelson, $13 Sir. Beans put a smile on a lot of people's faces yesterday, but not as many as you put on the faces with that song and your tribute to $13 soybeans.
Oh, stop. I'm glad I could bring joy
Dude,
to a few.
That
gives
fantastic.
Me a lot of joy.
Fantastic. Oh, people, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you've got to find a way to listen to yesterday's show. Number one, we had a great conversation with Scott Varlick from Coima Coima Varlick about what's going on in the cattle market. Number two, at the end of the show, Davis delivered what has been described as maybe the most impactful musical moment in commodity market history.
Now, who described it as that? Is this you talking?
that was from Clinton Griffiths.
Oh,
Farm Journal editor and host of Ag Day, anchor of Ag Day.
I am Clinton.
From Clinton himself. Well, that is high praise indeed. Wow.
I'm telling you, you guys, you have got to, you know what? You know what, Davis? That right there, what you did with that song, that's being part of the solution. That is not creating problems for anybody. That's being part of the solution. That is my number one resolution heading into 2021, to be part of the solution, not to add on to problems.
Well, I already did that in 2020, so 21, I'm going to be part of the problem. I'll go the other way.
No.
Balance is what we're after here, right?
Listen, you're coming with me on this one. We are going to be part of the solution right here on AgriTalk.
Roger that, big fella. I can't wait. I can't wait to see what comes in 2021. It's going to be great.
It's going to be fantastic. And we're all going to be part of it and make it happen. Make it happen. Great show today. National Restaurant Association update. We're going to talk carbon with Andy Knepp from Bayer and Scott Shelady. We're going to wrap up the morning hour for 2020 with Scott Shelady giving us some insight into 2021. All right, man, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Argentina's back in the news. They will suspend export sales of corn until February 28 in a bid to make sure domestic food supplies remain ample. In a statement, the Ag Ministry said, quote, "This decision is based on the need to ensure the supply of grain for the sectors that use it as a raw material for the production of animal protein. The country has authorized 34.23 million tons of corn for export out of an exportable supply of 38.5 million tons, the ministry said. So they're holding on to roughly 4 million tons for animal feed there just to make sure they've got it.
Gotcha. Yeah. And this is part of the function of the market. Although in the U.S., we would let the market do it. You see what I mean? In Argentina, the government does it, steps in and says, listen, we're going to slow down the exports. We would allow the price to ration that use.
Okay. Well, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said lawmakers would only consider an omnibus bill that included the $2,000 checks and two other issues that President Donald Trump has demanded Congress address, which include investigating the integrity of the 2020 election and revoking legal protections for social media platforms. Democrats will not take up either matter dooming any chance that such a bill could pass. Speaking from the Senate floor, McConnell accused Democrats of overstepping, saying, quote, the Senate is not going to be bullied into rushing out more borrowed money into the hands of Democrats' rich friends who don't need the help. Yikes. Yeah. Scathing commentary from McConnell.
Yeah. I want to talk to Shelley about that at the end of the show, see if he thinks McConnell is making a mistake, because the Democrats are feeling pretty doggone good down in Georgia right now.
Yes, they are.
And the handling of this proposal is part of the reason that the Democrats are feeling pretty good.
Well, Britain's post-Brexit trading agreement with the European Union was signed into law after being overwhelmingly approved by Parliament and will go into effect at 11 p.m. tonight. That's London time. Meanwhile, the U.S. increased tariffs it imposes on European products, including cognac and airline parts, in retaliation for Europe's state aid to Airbus. The increase would bring U.S. tariffs more in line with those the European Union imposes on the U.S. Yeah, is this a big deal here?
No, yeah, I don't think it's going to be huge.
Well, yeah. Well, China has approved its first COVID vaccine made by state-backed Sinopharm. I don't know if I'm taking any medicines with the Sinopharm label on it. I'm just saying. Regulators said that interim results suggest that the vaccine is safe and 79% effective, although no detailed data were provided and the process has been criticized for a lack of transparency. Still, China will push ahead with an inoculation program. And finally, Missouri Republican Senator Josh Hawley said that he will object when Congress counts the Electoral College votes next week, which will force lawmakers in both the House and Senate to vote on whether to accept the results of President-elect Joe Biden's victory. Chip. Yeah,
it's going to be interesting. All right, David, thank you very much. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Greg, Happy New Year, buddy.
Happy New Year. Chip, we've almost put 2020 behind us.
Yes. Yeah, good thing right there. We're going to let 2020 kind of slink off and into the timber and die on its own.
And nobody's going to be happier to see it go than cattlemen, right?
Yeah.
And it looks like what we're seeing this week, another $2 added on to that cash trade from the $2 that we added last week. Well, the good news, the positive news, is January's looking pretty good. And, Chip, we talked a lot this year about that backlog of cattle that appears to all be cleaned up now. It's been painful, right? But seasonally, there will be about 400,000 fewer cattle to slaughter in the first quarter of 2021 than there were in the last quarter of 2020. So we've got declining supplies. Looks like the carcass weights are coming down some. And, you know, we've got another winter storm headed this way.
Yep.
Bad news if you're feeding cattle, but usually good news for prices. So the outlook's a little better as we end the year.
Okay. Well, and we're getting some support from the supply side, but the demand side of the beef market is still pretty doggone good too, right?
Absolutely. Everyone, all of the analysts say that the demand throughout this pandemic has just been tremendous, better than they expected. And we saw a lot of beef featuring going into Christmas was the highest level since the start of the pandemic. According to USDA, the retail beef feature activity index the week prior to Christmas was 101,000. In other words, about double what it was the 4 weeks prior to that. So people are, they may be staying at home, but they're also eating beef.
Right, right. Good stuff. Greg, thanks, buddy. Appreciate you. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Chip. Happy New Year.
All right, man. Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. During that opening segment there, David called in. He wanted to express his love for Don't Stop Soybeanin'.
Oh, well, thank you, David. I appreciate the support.
Nice?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's very nice. Thank you, David.
All right. I love it, too. I want it to be a ringtone. That's what I'm looking for. I want it on my phone.
That's going too far.
We're talking restaurants next.
Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. But exports are unreliable and have been flat for 30 years. So how do we utilize all that corn while ensuring dependable markets right here at home? POET is working hard to increase the amount of ethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%.
Nationwide, adoption of E15 would generate almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year, which is the equivalent of nearly doubling corn exports by increasing domestic markets that can't be taken away. That's 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support higher blends of ethanol. It's time for farmers to unite around E15. Biofuels like ethanol are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture will change the world. Learn more about what you can do to support Nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag.
AgriTalk is brought to you by new Dilaro Complete Fungicide. Dilaro Complete, 3 modes of action for consistent disease control.
You know, you could probably collaborate with this guy.
Another musical member of the AgriTalk family.
Exactly.
Joe V.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Back
his
bit.
Supergroup,
Greasehog. Greasehog. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That is Davis.
David.
And we have been lucky enough to have a series of conversations this year with Mike Watley. Mike is the VP of State and Local Affairs for the National Restaurant Association. He's been keeping us up to speed on what's happening among the restaurants that are struggling so desperately across the country, really, to stay in business. And we've got him here on the final day of the year. Mike, thank you so much for all the time that you've given to AgriTalk over the course of the year here. And thanks again for joining us here this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and happy holidays to you and all your listeners.
Yes, excellent. Excellent. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Big Apple just pointed out that Sean Kennedy from the National Restaurant Association has also been on the show talking with us. But Mike, the latest stimulus package, what's in it for the restaurant owners?
Sure. So this latest stimulus package is a really great down payment on helping restaurants survive the winter and moving into next year. There are a couple of different factors in it that are useful to restaurants, but by far the biggest and most important is a second draw of the Paycheck Protection Program, which will allow restaurants who take up to 3.5 times monthly payroll for their business and then utilize those funds for mostly payroll, but also important business functions like their rent, like their inventory, and a whole host of different things. So this is a big chunk of money they'll have access to, hopefully, in the next couple of weeks. And it's a really important lifeline for the industry going forward. By no means perfect, but it's really good for the industry.
Good, good, good. You called it a down payment. I assume that means the NRA, National Restaurant Association, thinks that there or believes that there will need to be additional support in the year ahead.
Absolutely. We'll be back in Congress and probably in a virtual fashion early next year, pushing for additional payments and additional help, because this crisis is unfortunately not going away anytime soon. We're at the very least many months away from that. So from our perspective, it was really important for Congress to pass something before they went away for the holidays to ensure restaurants had access to money in the winter. But this is going to be a long process, as we discussed. We're talking about short-term, mid-term, long-term. So there's much more to come, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. There's got to be a certain level of optimism coming back to the business, though, with the vaccines that are now available, isn't there?
There's a lot of, let's say, medium to long-term optimism, and that hopefully states can start rolling the vaccines out as quickly as possible and getting as many people vaccinated as possible. But you know, even under the best scenario, we're talking Q2, Q3 of next year before we get back to a sense of normalcy. So it's making sure that restaurants have the support from all levels of government and from their customers to survive that long. Because so far, we've sadly seen over 110,000 restaurants close their doors, which it's devastating. And we want to prevent that from being a larger number going forward.
Now, is that a permanent closure, Mike? Or is there, I mean, there's got to be a chance that some of those 110,000 are going to come back.
Sure. So it's both permanent and also closed long term. So a trend we're seeing more and more of, especially in more kind of coastal regions, is restaurants that are closing, quote unquote, for the winter and are planning on reopening in the spring. Will some of them reopen? I sure hope so. But once you close your doors and say you're not opening for several months, it becomes really challenging to reopen. And so hopefully they do, but I think many of those are unfortunately lost long term.
Right, right. And so many of those business owners don't own the physical building that they're in. They're renting that building. Right. And, I mean, the landlord's got to get paid too. So,
no,
man.
Absolutely.
Tough situation.
And, you know, early on in the crisis, we saw a lot of landlords who were working with restaurants and saying, okay, I'll defer your rent for a couple of months. But to your point, the landlord presumably has a mortgage to pay or has a business to run. So at some point, they unfortunately could no longer continue being nice unless their mortgage lender was providing them a break. So we've seen that become a big challenge as, landlords have said, look, I want you to be here. I want to work with you, but, I have bills to pay too. So it's just a challenge all around.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the genius of some of these business owners, Mike, that they have displayed in their efforts to stay open and continue to serve their customers. It's absolutely fascinating to see the lengths that some of these restaurant owners are going through to serve their customers. It's amazing.
We've seen some real ingenuity since March. Look back at March when restaurants were shut down entirely for on-premise dining. Everyone pivoted to delivery and takeout. Then you had, small amounts of in-person dining allowed again. So you saw the rise of outdoor dining. Then it got cold and everyone had to figure out how do you, winterize your patios? How do you do those small little igloos you're seeing in some places? And then, as it gets simply too cold to have outdoor dining in many markets, how do you then again pivot to being delivery and takeout? Restaurant operators have been pivoting on almost a monthly or weekly basis at this point. So we've seen some real creative options come out of this, but it's been a challenge. And I know many restaurateurs are certainly looking forward to the day when this is all past.
Oh, yeah. running a restaurant with standard operating procedures is, to have that as a goal for a restaurant owner, there's going to be so much relief when they get to that point. It's one of the news programs that I caught here. I think it was just yesterday morning. There was some restaurant in the Chicago suburbs that is working with an RV dealer, and they put campers in the parking lot, and you can have your own, dining experience in one of these campers. And then they've also trained the service staff to be salespeople for these campers, and if they sell one, they get the commission on it. I mean, that's
amazing.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen so much creativity in the last couple of months, be it, an example like the RVs, or be it these kind of mini igloos that can seat one table, or mini greenhouses, all the different things that are being done with heaters and tents. There's been a lot of creativity, and the one kind of silver lining or one thing that may come out of this that's a positive for the industry is customers like outdoor dining. Customers like a lot of what they're seeing. So I think once we get on the other side of this crisis, a lot of those really interesting and creative methods for outdoor dining, I think you're going to stick with the industry long
term. Stick around. Yep. Now, when we get past this crisis, we've talked about how businesses, office space in particular, is going to it's probably changed forever. Now, I've got to believe that takeout and delivery and the out of restaurant dining experience that so many of these restaurants are delivering right now, that's going to continue to be part of their business, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at delivery and takeout, even prior to the pandemic, we were seeing that be a major trend for the industry. And that's going to continue. There's been a lot of talk about third-party delivery and how much has been added in that space. But from our estimates, the biggest addition for all restaurants in this crisis has been curbside to-go, where you're really not having to come into the restaurant to get your to-go order. You're doing it online. You're texting the restaurant when you get there, and they're bringing the food out and putting it in your trunk. I think that's going to continue. Restaurants are historically a very low-tech business. You don't have a lot of technology in a restaurant. But a lot of that has changed. And we've seen, I would say, probably 10 years of technological innovation for restaurants happen in 10 months at this point.
Right. Okay. Mike, let's help us be part of the solution here. What do we need to do as consumers to be supportive of the restaurants out there? I mean, I'm finding myself to be a much more willing tipper, I guess, trying to help out the wait staff through this crisis.
Yeah, whatever you are most comfortable doing. If you're comfortable going to your favorite restaurant and dining in person inside, great. If you're able to eat outside in whatever climate you're in, do that. If you're not comfortable eating on premise, do a to-go order, do a delivery order, order a gift card. Remember, if you're going to go, please do tip your wait staff, because every dollar does matter. So, you know, patronize your favorite restaurants as much as you can in whatever way you're comfortable doing, so that they're around when we get on the other side of this crisis, hopefully later this coming year.
Yep. Davis, do you hear that? To be part of the solution, we just got to eat.
Yeah, that's all we got to do. I can do that. I was going to do that anyway.
I'm really good at this. I am really good at this. Mike, thank you so much. Happy New Year to you, man. We will check in again with you in 2021, okay?
Great. Happy New Year to you.
All right. That is Mike Watley. He is the VP of State and Local Affairs for the National Restaurant Association. Okay, when we come back, let's talk carbon. We've got Andy Knepp from Bayer right here on AgriTalk.
There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. Moving from 10 to 15% ethanol nationwide would result in almost 2 billion bushels of new domestic corn demand each year. That means nearly eliminating the need for corn exports by ensuring dependable markets right here at home while driving commodity prices to profitable levels. Biofuels are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Geez, Brian, the way these markets are trading going into the end of the year, was there any export sales announcements this morning?
You know what? We had the weekly export sales. Were nothing really to write home about for the grain and soy markets. I mean, they were okay, but nothing really spectacular from that standpoint. Nothing on the daily side of things.
Wow. To report. Because the markets are trading to the upside, and it sure feels like a demand-led market. And that soybean oil market this morning, Beach, that's really helping out beans, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think playing catch up there. We did have the announcement yesterday from Argentina that they're shutting off corn exports through the end of February. So that really put a charge into the market late yesterday there, and seeing follow through today. Soybeans just continue to charge higher. We pushed through $13 and didn't find any lack of buyer interest there, and so we continue higher there. So just all in all, a really strong finish here to the year.
All right, we've got plus signs over in the livestock trade, too.
Yeah, I mentioned the export sales, weekly export sales, weren't anything to write home about on grains, but the pork sales and beef, too. But really, on the pork side of things, that's given us a charge in that market. Strong gains there to close out the week and the year here. And China was the big buyer for 2021, and 2021 sales have been lagging overall, especially for China. So that's some good news there. And then on the beef side of things, we did get higher cash cattle trade yesterday. And then, like I mentioned, pretty solid weekly export sales this morning.
Excellent. Happy New Year, buddy.
Same to you.
All right. Brian Grady, Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com. You can't find the
words to say. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Okay, guys, we're going to dive into a topic that we have talked about many times on AgriTalk, and we're still looking for all of that clarity on carbon and carbon sequestration. We're going to get into some more of it right now with Andy Knapp. Andy is the head of environmental strategy and industry activation for Bayer Crop Science. Basically what he does is he manages the sustainability partnerships there at Bayer. Andy, welcome to AgriTalk. Thank you so much for making time.
Thanks, Chip. I appreciate it.
All right. So on AgriTalk, Andy, we've been doing a lot of looking ahead into 2021 and carbon, and making a market for carbon sequestration is showing up everywhere. Do you feel the momentum as well?
Yeah, I mean, Chip, this is something that we've been working on for a number of years, and it's certainly picking up speed and gaining, I think, more and more sort of momentum, awareness, both at the farm gate as well as sort of at a societal level. And it really, I think, presents a really great opportunity for farmers, and that's one of the things that we're really trying to chase after.
Okay, Andy, why now? Is it that the time is finally right, or is it being forced somehow, some way?
Yeah, I think the real good answer, I think, from our perspective on that is the time is right because we finally have, I think, a strong enough grasp on the science. We have a strong enough grasp on what that market opportunity could look like. So it's really sort of a convergence. And I don't think, from my perspective, that it's forced at all. I mean, again, certainly there's a much, much bigger narrative and conversation going on, societally, again, around climate, around carbon. But it really takes having everything pulled together in order to make this really, truly the opportunity that we're seeing.
Okay, so the incoming Biden administration, Andy, is it and the expectations around the administration, is that adding to the momentum, do you believe?
You know, I think that from my perspective remains to be seen. I think that would be, quite frankly, foolish to not say that that won't have an impact. But we really don't know what that impact is. And sort of outside of anything that's happening politically, it's an opportunity that, from a scientific perspective, from a financial perspective, I think is going to happen outside of the space of what's happening in governments anywhere. Right now, again, not that they won't have an influence, but this was happening before then, and it's going to continue to happen regardless, sort of what happens.
Gotcha. The buildup into all of this, Andy, it's come from many different origins. There are many different narratives, messages being sent about carbon and carbon sequestration. I think it is building up an expectation among some farmers, that this is going to be that the revenue generated from carbon sequestration could be equivalent to producing a crop. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, you know, I wish my crystal ball was that good. We might not be having this conversation. I might be doing something different.
Yeah.
The reality is, Chip, we look at this first and foremost, and, my own personal perspective, I'm an agronomist by training. I've spent years working with farmers, delivering them technology. And so there's a piece of this, which is, what are the agronomic practices that can help, improve, outcomes on the farm, right? Let's set aside carbon, right? So just thinking about things like soil health, things like improved nutrient cycling, reduction in erosion, a lot of the climate smart practices that we would, that we're talking about as being carbon sequestering have agronomic benefits to farmers that are going to provide, potential down the road for them, not just to sell carbon or to sell other ecosystems services like, water quality credits or nutrient credits. I mean, there's lots of talk and lots of people looking into those sorts of things as well. But it's really about saying, how do we make that farm more sustainable for the future? And that really talks and speaks to the productivity of the soil and protecting that resource. And, mm-hmm. and farmers have certainly always been highly regarded as stewards of the land. And so we look at this as saying, let's deal with those things first. If we can get into this system or this marketplace and help farmers get into this marketplace, where it goes from here, We don't know exactly what that number would look like, but we're bullish enough on the notion that we've made a significant investment to try and help farmers get there.
Right. Okay. It seems to me that when I talk with farmers and carbon comes up, there is either a high level of excitement because the farmer has done some thinking, they've done some planning, they've maybe already started to take some action, or you get this kind of a dull look with I don't even know where to start when it comes to this and being involved in carbon sequestration. Address the farmer that is starting from ground level. What should they be doing right now to be in a position to benefit from this in the future?
Yeah, I think, Chip, it really takes, you know, again, just a good conversation with a trusted agronomist, with a trusted advisor. You know, there's no inherent rocket science around some of these practices, right? But there are things that farmers need to learn, and you know, again, to your point, there are many farmers that have adopted no-till, have adopted cover cropping, or strip-till, the practices that we're recommending for our initiative. But it really, to me, is not something that's inherently a challenge to understand. It's more of a how do you adjust your operation? What are the trade-offs that you need to be considering as you make changes in your operation? Because, look, we recognize you know, some of these practices that farmers are doing in terms of the way that they manage their land are sort of ingrained, in that making a wholesale switch is not necessarily an easy thing to do. So really thinking about, you know, talking with your agronomist, getting that expertise to help set you up for how you can make the changes. And then, you know, as well, if there's an opportunity to be connected to a program where somebody's, you know, willing to pay for carbon, you know, how do you get connected to that? And that's ultimately what we're trying to help farmers understand and do.
Gotcha. Okay. You mentioned the investment that's been made in the whole concept, and it's an investment of dollars, but it's brain power that's been invested in this, time that's been invested in this. And then from the farmer's point of view, like you said, there are those that have gone minimum strip, no-till. They are planting cover crops, and they are investing dollar bills in this, with the idea that at a certain point there's going to be a return. The timetable on that return to them, what do you think it looks like?
That's a great question. You know, we actually started, you know, really now almost 6 years ago when we helped found the Soil Health Partnership with the Corn Growers Association. And it was really to start to try and answer these questions. You know, what is soil health? What does that mean on the farm? What are the potential returns to the farmer in terms of, again, just the agronomic benefits that can accrue to them through working to improve their soil health? So we're still, I think very much knee deep in really trying to truly understand what does all that mean. I think it's certainly going to be dependent on an individual farm. It's going to be soil type dependent, but you know, we do know that there are some, you know, there's some cost savings that can occur from some of these practices, or, you know, there's some costs that are incurred through things like cover cropping, but it's really trying to look at that whole farming operation and say, you know, how does that actually help improve soil health and productivity for the long term? And at the same time, you know, can we extract some additional value from, you know, things like carbon? So we're still, you know, Chip, I would say this, we're still very much in the middle of really trying to understand at an individual farm level what that can mean. But what we do know is that incentivizing farmers to adopt these practices is, I think, really the Kickstarter that we need to see in order to get it moving. And we've had, you know, we certainly had an expectation for what we would get from an enrollment perspective in our program. We had, you know, enrollments and interests that far exceeded what our expectations were from farmers. So it really tells me that there's far more interest in this than probably what we all maybe expected from the beginning.
Okay. This is fascinating to me, Andy. I've only got about 30 seconds left for this, but I got to ask you, and I'm not talking about farmers on this. I'm talking about agribusiness.
what's the level of excitement around carbon for 2021 in agribusiness?
Yeah, I think there's tremendous level of excitement. I mean, you've heard what we're doing. There's lots of other people that are interested in getting into this space. The reality of it is that I think we're all interested in how do we help farmers do what they do it better. How do we make them successful? Because when farmers are successful, we're successful, and this just provides another benefit that society can say we're happy with what's happening in agriculture.
Well, I tell you what, it feels like the whole industry is expecting progress to be made on gaining a better understanding of what this carbon market is going to look like in the future in 2021. And I know, count me in on that, Andy. I'm looking forward to it as well. Thank you, Andy. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Jeff. Have a happy new year and safe 2021 to all.
Thank you so much. That is Andy Knapp, head of the Environmental Strategy and Industry Activation for Bayer Crop Science. We'll be back with AgriTalk in a moment.
Eric is here with the tunage. What do you got? Nickelback? You got me Nickelback? All right, fine. They'll do. Nickelback.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me.
There's your Fantastic. Nickelback, bro.
There it is. There it is. I love it. Love it. Good stuff. Good stuff. Hey, talking about good stuff, I have really come to enjoy the conversations that we have with Scott Shellady. And when I was thinking about how are we going to wrap up 2020 for the morning show, I thought we need to get Scott in here and get his thoughts about what he's looking forward to the most in 2021. He joins us right now. Scott is with the Cow Guy Group and Optimus Futures. I got that right, don't I, Scott?
Good enough. I'll take it.
Excellent. Excellent. How you doing, man? Happy New Year.
I'm good. You actually literally just caught me. It's fortuitous. You just caught me. I write a column for the Northwest Indiana Times on Sundays, and you just caught me writing my year-end column. So it's
perfect.
A pretty good segue. Yeah.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. Are you tracking what's going on in these grain markets, Scott?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of hand-holding as of late, if you know what I mean. These things have, as my dad would say, bless his soul, the markets are going up like a homesick angel. So it's been pretty interesting, and it's, boy, have we come a long, long way since we were at the depths of this stuff in April when it looked like it was going to be an absolutely horrible year. And, you know, I'll throw this in there. You know, I talked to a lot of older, very successful farmers that are very well capitalized, and they've all quietly told me with their tinfoil hats on that if we didn't have a lockdown for 2020, that we might even be finding ourselves in a much, much tighter situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. You said that you're doing some hand-holding in here. What's that about? Is it guys that feel like they sold too early, or guys that have stayed patient and are waiting for the right time to sell?
More of the first than the latter. I mean, with all the new products out there, you know, a lot of these accumulators and these OTC things, the market's gotten very, entirely technical, right? And so these structures that these traders, these big farmers are now putting on, they work, and they still are working, but they're easier to see work in an orderly market. When things go one way this quickly, and as quickly as say beans have as of late, it does ruffle the feathers a little bit, and everybody kind of is calling everybody else to find out what the heck, where they stand, and you know, how do these things work. So it's been I've been more of a Dear Abby than I have been a broker as of late.
Interesting. Professional trader, Scott, how does a professional trader trade markets like these?
Well, I mean, they're going to look at the technicals first. A lot of them like to take the word soybeans or corn or cattle off the top of the chart because they just want to have an unbiased point of view and look at the numbers, how they're coming across on their screens. They'll do that. Some of them will then lead towards fundamentals after they look at the technicals. But I think that also, you know, speculators, although they do get a really bad name almost all of the time, there absolutely is an economic function that they serve, and they're actually needed in these markets because when we have too many beans, they'll start to sell the market and drive it down, and then everybody gets mad that speculators are driving the market down. But they're just trying to tell you that, hey, we've got too much. You know, there's no reason. And then at the same time, when we don't have enough, they buy the market higher and help raise prices too. So they play a good role. They get in early.
Yeah.
Most of those speculators are pretty highly technical and have a lot of assets at their use. But there's a spot at the table for everybody, and they're not the and they always get a bad rap, but they actually do serve a good purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to talk a little politics with you. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, is he making a mistake in how he's handling that proposal to push the stimulus checks from 600 to 2,000?
Well, I have to go on record and say I'm 100% against government handouts. Mm-hmm. However, what the government did to the economy by shutting it down was no small businessman's fault, why he's out of business today. So once you break it, you own it, and they should write a check. Now, they've already done that once. McConnell's playing hardball right now, and he's playing a very, very dangerous game, if you ask me, because he's lost sight of why average Americans are angry. He thinks it's because it's $600 versus $2,000. That's not it. And no one's written about this, and I'll be writing about this myself after we get off the phone. But what Americans are angry about, if you really take the pulse of the common man, if there was no other money going abroad, everybody would say, oh, $600 isn't that much, but I'll take it. But because they see $700 billion going to other countries abroad, that really makes that $600 feel like a really bad tip in a really bad restaurant.
Right.
And so they're losing the sight of the fact that it's not the money amount, $600 or $2,000. It's the optics of the other money going elsewhere, which is the taxpayers' money. And they're missing that whole point. So they're focusing on the amount when it should be on the optics. I think they've missed that boat big time. And now he's playing a very, very dangerous game because of what we've got happening in Georgia.
Right, right. Absolutely. Okay. 2021. Let's go concerns first. What's got you most concerned as we go into the new year?
The markets are trading a lot on hopium. I mean, obviously, we've got some dryness, and there's some good fundamental reasons why we've seen these row crops rally. And in 08, they were the things that helped turn around the economy, too.
Yeah.
That's all good. But what really makes me nervous is the fact that we're borrowing a lot of good news from 2021 already. That's where we've seen the equity markets borrow this good news. We're trading what I would call hopium, right, that things are going to get back to normal. But I'm just going to tell you right now, January is going to be the 13th month in 2020, all right? Nothing's going to change. We're going to continue to wear the face diapers, as I call them. And as long as they've been saying that you have to have a mask on, and once you have the vaccine, regardless, we're not going to get rid of social distancing right away. So restaurants are going to be at best running on 50% of capacity. All other businesses are going to be running on 50% capacity. How many people are going to go to a ball game? How many people are going to get in that elevator? So everybody's wanting and hoping it gets back to normal faster than it is, but it's not going to be. So right now we're borrowing demand, borrowing good news, and I think that's going to really kind of come to fruition, and a lot of people are going to be disappointed.
Okay, 20 seconds. Optimism for 2021.
I really like the way these grain markets and the commodity sector is waking up like it did in 08, and that was the start of the big run we've had the last 12 years, and that could be something that we're building on right now.
Scott, Happy New Year, brother. Appreciate you so much.
All right,
man.
Good luck, fellas. Happy New Year. Okay, see you.
Excellent. That's Scott Shellady, the Cow Guy Group, Optimus Futures. Man, love talking to Scott and getting his views on what's going on out there. Come back this afternoon. We got one more hour left in 2020. Clark Neighbors, BIS Commodities will be joining us. And tomorrow morning, January 1, 2021, free-for-all, Wiesmeyer Haney and Michelle Jones, right here on AgriTalk.